Right now is the executive producer of the great show on Fox called Futurama. You can see it Sunday nights at 7 o'clock on a Fox affiliate near you. David X. Cohen joins us. The X stands for X-rated, right?
I like to think so, but not as often as I'd like to think so.
The X is
a phony contrivance, to be honest.
For all you folks who are...
The Writers Guild, which is the union of TV writers, will not allow any two members to have the same name, and my real middle initial is S, but another David S. Cohen had the nerve to have that name before me, so I had to concoct a new name for myself.
Well, X sounds almost like S.
It does, and that was to cause the least possible discord with my parents. I couldn't change the name that they picked out for me too much without losing my inheritance. So.
Now, David, I know where you got your sense of humor, because I know you were at the president of Harvard Lampoon for a while, one year, and I know that you obviously have a good sense of humor. But you also went on, and I'm sure your parents were very proud. Nice boy, he went to Harvard, and then he went to grad school, got a master's degree in computer science, and then they must have been really proud when you were working on Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah, I pretty much went off the cliff there, didn't I? That was a difficult phone call. I said, "Hey, Mom, Dad, you know that $90,000 you just spent on my education? Well, you're not seeing a return on that." that was a difficult call, but I think things worked out okay.
Well, obviously they worked out well, but I would assume, though, that initially speaking, especially when they saw Beavis and Butthead, they must have been like...
Actually, they don't have cable TV still, so I'm not sure they've ever seen it yet.
Well, that's actually good.
I'm still hiding it after 10 years from them.
So. That's actually good, though, don't you think?
It probably is good. I told them it's a very intellectual show that put a lot... There were a lot of computer science and physics jokes in there, so I used a little bit of my background as far as they are concerned. Don't tell anybody.
Now,
Mom, if you're listening.
you do have a master's in computer science, and computers have been so interesting since you went to school with the internet and all these things that have been developed. How involved are you? Do you do anything at all with the computers in terms of the stuff?
Our show uses a lot of technology. I myself really could almost do my job with a pencil. I use a computer to write on and send email and stuff, but nothing that your average non-computer scientist doesn't do. But our show does use a lot of technology. For example, we have 3D computer graphics that are mixed in with the traditional hand animation. So that's sort of a new thing, which the technology had just become available around when Futurama was coming on the air to do that at a reasonable cost. So we got to break a little ground technologically. So I'd like to think I at least helped to shepherd that along.
Now, you went from the Beavis and Butthead show to I think, one of the classics of TV, actually, Fox's The Simpsons Show. And I assume that's where you met Matt.
Exactly. I was writing for The Simpsons for about 5 years, and even of all the nerds on the Simpsons writing staff, of which there are plenty, I stood out apparently. So he picked me out to help him with Futurama, and I jumped at the chance because it just kind of combined everything I've ever been interested in, science and science fiction and comedy writing and everything. So I just kind of hung out with Matt for probably over a year, just in our spare time, just nights and weekends, and talked about all our favorite things from sci-fi and Star Trek and books we liked and everything, and we just thought about basically what can we borrow or steal from all of these things and make the universe that we want to see in 1,000 years from now. So that was really a blast, actually.
It's a fun show. I mean, The Simpsons is a fun show, too, but this is a little bit more, it's a different show, but it still has the same kind of humor.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly on the nose what we were gunning for. We wanted the same kind of pace and the same sort of attitude where you could... Kids could appreciate the show on one level, but adults could appreciate it on another level. But at the same time, we wanted it to be there to be no doubt that it was a different show from The Simpsons. So obviously we have this crazy setting 1,000 years in the future, and we have sort of a different cast of characters also, whereas The Simpsons has kids and parents. We wanted to go more for people in between those two ages, so we could do a few more stories about romances and getting your first job and all those kind of things. So we definitely wanted to differentiate it while keeping some of the same satirical tone of The Simpsons.
Well, I know we've had many of the voices of the show on our show, and they fit perfectly. When you're casting voices, tell me a little bit about that. How do you do it, and what makes you think, well, that's the right voice for this character?
You know, it's a really hard process, especially casting the voice of Bender, the robot on our show. That was really difficult because we had no idea what a robot should sound like when we started doing this. And our first thought was the usual, you know, I am robot 718, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And we tried a few people with that, and we just decided, you know, we're not going to want to hear that week after week. That's fine for about 4 seconds, and then you never want to hear it again. So then we were thinking, like, okay, how about a really deep voice? And we had, you know, then we had 50 guys in who had the deepest voices you've ever heard. And we were like, well, I don't know, and maybe. And then really what happened is this guy, John DiMaggio, came in, who you may have spoken with before.
Yeah, we had him on the show.
And he basically is the real-life Bender, by the way. It's basically like working with Bender when you meet this guy. And he had this voice, which I think he really is just a kind of a voice he's used to joke around his whole life, so it had a lot of character behind it already. And I believe he actually auditioned for the voice of the professor with that voice, but then we said, hey, try it again for Bender, because, you know, we had the idea that Bender was going to be fueled by liquor.
Uh-huh.
And that voice he does is sort of a little bit intoxicated sounding at any given time. And it just seemed to work suddenly. It just fit with all the characteristics we already had in mind for Bender. So I can't claim it was total skill. It was a lot of, it was sort of trial and error, basically, until we just found this thing that we hadn't thought of that worked. So I think being open-minded, I guess, is the lesson I learned. And to hear what hear the voices the actor sort of has in their repertoire and match them up, as opposed to trying to force something on them.
We're talking with David X. Cohen, the executive producer of the great show on Fox, Futurama, which airs on Sunday nights at 7 o'clock. And you've actually won a couple of Emmys for your work on The Simpsons, right?
Yeah, I was happy and lucky to be there at during some of the great seasons there. And we got one for an episode with John Waters guest starring, which is the other one for? I think the other one is for the one where Homer becomes the head garbage man in town, if I'm not mistaken. So, I got to work on just some great episodes, and I learned a tremendous amount about, mainly about how hard you have to work to make one of these shows. That's the main lesson I learned from The Simpsons.
My favorite episodes of The Simpsons are those Halloween shows.
Oh, well, then you're talking to the right person, actually, because I helped write 5 of those during my time there.
The Treehouse of Horror.
Treehouse of Horror, including the three-dimensional one to zoom back to the computer graphics one. If you ever saw the one with Homer in the third dimension,
mm-hmm.
That was one of my many Halloween contributions. So, yeah, those are among my favorites always. Yeah.
So do you always have a kind of a warped sense of humor?
I guess so. I think it definitely evolved during these years that I've been in L.A. writing for these shows. But it started at an early age. It's one of the things that was my hobby before it was my career. And even, I would say, as early as age 4, probably, I started drawing cartoons, and I would force my sister, my younger sister when she was 2, to buy them from me for a penny. And I would gradually take all her pennies by selling her these cartoons I had drawn. So it's sort of something which was my hobby early on, and then I managed to make a living at it, which is a pretty good way to go if you can.
Yeah, I wasn't actually giving you an insult by saying that, because I think that to be, like, for instance, the president of the National Lampoon or the Harvard Lampoon, you've got to have a kind of a crazy sense of humor. You've got to be a little unusual, but also you have to be pretty intelligent to do it.
A bunch of other crazy people to vote for you in that election. That is a strange election for that office.
How many people write Futurama?
We have about 13 full-time writers, and that may sound like a lot, and it is, but it's the least of any of the animated shows on, believe it or not. I think The Simpsons is well over 20 writers currently. King of the Hill has about 18, 19, I think. So it's just the nature of these shows that they're so dense, and we're trying to cram, you know, even funny signs in the background while other things are going on, that you really need an army of people just basically hammering jokes into every crack you can find, and just looking for any place where you can stick another joke in. So it's the nature of the show that you have to have a group doing it. It's not a solo effort at all. It's very much a group effort, like The Simpsons is.
Now, how do you get your writers, and how do you become a writer? If people out there are listening, and I'm sure there are some that say themselves, I'd love to be a writer on TV. I'm funny, and you know, I can write. How do you go about doing that?
It's a very nebulous process. Usually the way people start is they write some sample scripts, two or three sample scripts for shows that they like on TV. Those are called spec scripts.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start begging people to read them and look at them. The hardest thing is to just get someone to look at them, because there are many, many people obviously hoping to break into this field, and you end up with piles of scripts in front of you. And, you know, you want to read them and give people the break that you got at some point, but at the same time, there's a volume which is impossible, so you have to just be persistent, basically, and find someone who will move your script to the top of the pile. And then, you know, if it's really good, you do have a chance, because there's a lot of TV stations now and a lot of need for writers. So it's just basically the hard part is getting someone to take notice of you at the beginning.
What does a writer start at when you first go to work?
Start at...
In terms of salary.
Oh, well, it pays well. I don't want to get into the full details. In fact, we don't know the full details because the Writers Guild, the union, is out negotiating as we speak in a desperate attempt to ward off a strike. So they set the salaries for all of the starting writers.
I see.
And that is up for grabs right now. But it's
very good.
It's a good living.
But
you don't. It's not a long career usually. There's not. You know. You don't really see that many writers. Certainly above 50, and it starts to even thin out when people are in their 40s, because it is grueling. You work very long hours. It's hard to have a family while you're doing it. So you do well, but for a short period of time, usually, I would say.
And we had on Skip Ferriston, who's from around our area, mm-hmm. who wrote a couple of episodes of the Seinfeld show.
Spike Ferriston.
Spike, yeah, Spike.
Yes, I know him.
Yeah. Spike's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Would I call him Skip?
I think so.
Yeah, I'll have to rewind that and correct it.
Skip will,
Spike will kill me if I do that. He's a local kid from Bridgewater, Massachusetts.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
And yeah, he's done great. And Futurama's on Sunday night at 7 o'clock. And this month, the 25th, February 25th episode, don't miss it, because it has the voice of Hank Azaria in it.
Yeah, that's a great one. He plays a washed-up actor from the era of the silent hologram. And the whole crew goes out to Hollywood of the year 3001, and they end up attending the Academy Awards of the future. So we get to see the future of that and some of the new categories, like best soft drink product placement, for example. So that's a really fun episode. And Hank Azaria, obviously, is fantastic, and does Apu and Mo and a lot of the funniest characters in The Simpsons. So it was kind of a treat for me to have him back on Futurama.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and I feel bad for him and Helen, but, you know, he'll
not
do fine.
Not your fault. I don't blame you.
He'll do fine. But also this Sunday night, folks, is a show that I'll have to watch, because obviously after calling Spike Ferriston Skip, it seems to me that the flying brains with the power to turn normal human beings into idiots have hit me, and they do hit the Fox Futurama show.
That's
on
right.
Sunday night. So
pure entertainment, I think nothing beats giant flying brains attacking Earth. So
absolutely nothing. There's nothing. There's nothing else.
later this spring, also actually some good guest stars. We have Beck and Lucy Liu, both going to be on the show in some upcoming months. So.
Cool. I also wanted to ask you real quick, because I know that you got to go. A guy that writes for TV and has been for years. Do you have some favorite TV shows you like to watch?
I do. The shows which I currently watch are basically the ones that are on in the middle of the night, because that's when I get home from work. But so I'm a big fan of The Sopranos and Oz, for example, on HBO,
yeah,
because they run them late at night and I can see them. Oh. And of course I love the Simpsons and King of the Hill, and I'll even watch Futurama even after I've seen it 50 times at work, just because it feels good to see it on the air after the amount of effort we put into it.
Do you ever catch the Monday night episodes of Boston Public and Ally McBeal?
Not usually, although I love Lucy Liu, so I try to sneak a glance at it occasionally. But generally, that is one of our late days, and I'm almost always at work. So, so I can't claim expertise there.
I'll give you a hint, David X. Cohen. For no charge, there is something called a VCR. You can actually record shows you miss.
I do that, but then the tapes pile up, and I never get around to it.
So I know, I do the same thing. I have like 50 piles.
I have everything on tape, but it's years of things. So yeah. There's no chance of ever catching it.
It's funny you mention it. I do the same thing. I have piles and piles of tapes here, and I never get a chance to watch them. But David X. Cohen, the executive producer of Futurama, good luck with the show, and anything else you attempt to do as well.
I appreciate that.
Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.